This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. 106.7 all over D.C. Welcome into our Richmond audience for the next 3 hours. AM 910, FM 105.1. Make sure you take us with you on the go, wherever you're at in the area, all over the country. The Odyssey app. You can hit pause. You can rewind. Listen to us that way. Podcast when we're done, up for 24 hours without having to hop to any sites to go download segments. Today was a big day in Ashburn. We actually had dudes on the grass and football being played.
Here we go.
Rookie minicamp. Little thing that Danny knows about me. Some of you new to the show might not. I am a sucker for any types of pictures or videos that come out of Ashburn of players on the grass for the first time in a while. Day one of training camp. Day one of rookie minicamp. Does not matter. Football being played makes me happy. We talk about the game all year long. For the last several weeks and few months, we've been talking about player movement and things that have nothing to do with actual games. And while today was a practice, maybe a glorified practice, it was basically drill work for less than 20 rookies, I got pumped just seeing dudes first time wearing their new numbers, their jerseys, this draft class being put to the test by the coaching staff to see what kind of shape they're in, see if some of that athleticism translates from the film.
That's what we like, man. I like much better when there are events to talk about. So I don't necessarily care about the pictures as much. I'd like a report. I want to hear that the first round pick doesn't stink. I want to hear that the second round pick showed upside. I want to hear that the, you know, middle round guy wasn't a waste. You know, all those things that you want, the prerequisite boxes checked. But I like having actual samples to discuss, games to discuss, rather than the idea of games 5 months from now, 6 months from now, what the lineup will look like then. I like being able to actually react to certain things. And this is the first time we can actually do that. These guys were drafted. They are Washington football teamers now. That is their deal. They're no longer college prospects. These are professional football players, and they play here.
One of the things that I'm so fixated by with this draft class is there are a bunch of players taken who do have a path to get on the field this year and that could help out considerably. But I think with almost every single player after Jamin Davis, we don't really know what the role's going to be initially. We can kind of go piece by piece, and I can make my case, try to make that make more sense. But within the last couple of years, you knew Antonio Gibson in the third round was going to be potentially a frequently used running back. And then when they released Adrian Peterson in training camp,
you really knew.
Terry McLaurin, when he got drafted at wide receiver, the initial thought was this guy's going to play a lot of special teams. If he can play wide receiver, though, he's going to get to run some routes because they're not very deep at that position. Right now, Danny, Jamin Davis is a three-down linebacker who's going to play. When that defense is on the field, he'll be on the field. Sam Cosmi, they just acquired another tackle in Charles Leno. He's your new starter at left tackle. Cornelius Lucas played well into last year. There's not really a path to getting on the field right away for him, and I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, he showed some of the tools, some of the athleticism. Go back and watch his catch and touchdown where he rumbled off the left edge into the end zone for a big guy score, where he was like diving for the pylon like he's Taylor Heineke.
Love it.
Against the Tampa Bay Bucks. He's athletic, but supposedly pretty raw and needs some coaching. No problem. Bury him on the depth chart early in the season. Cool. What about Benjamin St. Juice, the corner from Minnesota? He's not unimpeded from getting on the field. They got an okay corner situation. They went out and they signed William Jackson, who could rival Kendall Fuller as your number one guy. Those two guys ideally will lock down half of the field. But who's the next man up if one of them goes down? I mean, Moreland maybe plays in the nickel, you would think. St. Juice could play a bunch this year, I would think.
Well, beyond that, look at the division. Dallas is going to go three wide at a minimum, almost on a down-by-down basis. Philadelphia, I think, you know, made an investment there to try to spread people out, drafting receivers. And the Giants, that's pretty much all their free agency was about, was going to get guys in both in the draft, in Kadarius Toney and other guys to spread the field and finally give Daniel Jones a chance with some weaponry with Saquon Barkley coming back. I think if you're a cornerback in this league, unless you're sixth or seventh on the depth chart and you're only allowed in the special teams meetings, there's a great chance you're going to see the field at some point. Just because of how many receivers and how spread out the field is going to have to be. If you can be physical, if you can jam people at the line, you could disrupt some routes and you could tackle a little bit, there's a spot for you playing in this division, I think, especially.
Deami Brown is someone that I think, depending on what happens with him at camp, could actually end up playing a whole lot. My hope is that he is good enough and proves capable enough as a route runner, savvy enough as a pro, that they can actually kick Curtis Samuel inside more often than they thought they might when they signed him. And by the way, that's not a bad thing. That is not any kind of a setback on the Curtis Samuel playmaker front. He can move all over the place. Outside, inside, in the slot, in the backfield. Look at how many carries he got last year. He was basically an extra back at times for the Carolina Panthers. And you know I've said this till I've been blue in the face. His best numbers and his most productivity has come when he has predominantly played in the slot. He actually had better numbers last year than 1 year before that with Rivera and Scott Turner in Charlotte, and he played in the slot a lot more last year. My favorite thing that could happen for this class is if Deami Brown ends up getting starts opposite McLaurin with Samuel inside, and that's your trio. Not a knock on Humphreys, who's really good in the slot. I just think that is the most dynamic version of this receiving
class. Yeah, 100% agree with that. And the thing that I like is versatility within that, right? Like, if you're having just a traditional slot role and you paid that much for Samuel, it's not the greatest thing in the world. But if he's also carrying the ball, also doing, you know, jet sweep type action, also lining up in stacks, also on the outside sometimes if you get him, you know, one-on-one with a nickel cornerback, right? If you get him on cornerback number three, yeah, then put his butt outside and let him work. I think having that versatility, making it more difficult to defend them. Last year, you knew exactly what was coming pretty much, right? It was, you're going to see some little bit off tackle. You see some of the quick passing game. Nobody was afraid of any part of their offense at any point in time. I'd like some fear instilled in defensive coordinators and defensive backs and linebackers. I'd like some misdirection. I want more, and I think now they've got the tools. This is a big prove-it year for Scott Turner for that reason.
Well, there's functional football speed with Brown, but he also has more 50-yard catches last couple years in college than anybody else. I mean, that guy can take first downs and make them touchdowns. Now, we've said there's a path to getting on the field for St. Juste. We're hoping that you see Brown work his way into that mix. Here's one guy that will definitely be playing a lot this year. John Bates, the fourth-round pick at tight end, because of their depth chart at that position.
And this is they needed this, and that's the guy they circled to get.
They knew what they needed. They needed a blocking tight end who could maybe catch some passes. Enter John Bates, tight end, Boise State. Now, we're going to talk in a few minutes about our guy, and we're the president and the vice president, whichever one on any given day wants to serve in either role works, for the Sammy's Reyes fan club. But he's a project. He's never played football before. Today was his first football practice ever, essentially. So John Bates is going to play. Logan Thomas, when he's on the field, goes out for passes.
Yep.
He can block a little bit. Former quarterback, though. Athlete. Look at what he did last year. They want to throw him the football. He's going to catch the rock. They want John Bates to do some blocking. He will play. He might actually play, in terms of the snap percentages and things at his position, more than any other rookie on the team other than Jamin Davis this year.
I agree with that, actually. That was going to be my sleeper pick for guy that gets on the field and has the impact, quote-unquote, most. They were desperate need of this. A run-blocking tight end. Now, you can't just have an obvious tell if he's in the game. It's a, you know, it's a running play like it was for Jeremy Sprinkle for a couple of years. He would chug onto the field, and everyone was like, okay, here comes the run, probably to that side. And Sprinkle wasn't even great as a blocker. He was fine. But by the sound of things, Bates can knock some people around and has a real good skill set there in terms of being able to block. He's got to be able to catch the ball just enough to keep you honest. I don't care about throwing the ball five, six, seven times a game. That's not the design. I don't care about that.
No, but do more than just Jeremy
enough.
Sprinkle.
Yeah, just enough to make sure that you can't just load up with like an extra linebacker or creep the safety down in the box.
Be a football player.
Yeah.
Have the ability to do both.
Agreed.
That's all I'm asking for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to beat up Jeremy Sprinkle. Seems like a very nice guy. Very gameless. Just kind of out there as this big dude.
He's a person.
Bates can do a little bit more than that. When I watched his highlights, notice I don't use the word film because I wasn't watching film.
No, you ground that over the film.
I was watching YouTube clips of him at Boise State. He does not move and kind of like sink his hips. And there's nothing all that fluid about his game. Like, he's not going to wow you and separate from people. I think he's a fairly kind of stiff, bigger guy, but he has awesome hands. Big time catch radius, and when you throw him the ball, he'll catch it. I think he's a much more athletic Logan Paulson, our good buddy, who comes on our show and breaks down.
And Logan liked him. Logan likes him a lot.
Logan
yeah.
liked him a lot, especially where they got him at pick 124. A fifth round, Derek Forrest, since he had a safe Cincinnati. Safety was on the field today. He's the guy that said gotcha for every question that we asked him in our interview. And then when he tweeted out that he signed his contract, hashtagged gotcha. It's like his catchphrase. I would not have drafted a long snapper ever. I am completely against drafting long snappers. They did it in the sixth round, so that's fine. Cameron Cheeseman out of Michigan. He presumably was snapping today at rookie minicamp, so that's good.
Cool.
And then we've talked to a couple of the seventh round picks. William Bradley King, defensive end from Baylor. Shaka Toney, defensive end from Penn State. I actually think both of those guys make the team. And little sleeper pick here. I think one of those two guys who's ever better, I'm going to guess it's Shaka Toney. I like his demeanor when we talk to him, and I like the fact that he put up numbers at Penn State. One of those dudes is going to play a little bit. Ryan Kerrigan, unlikely to come back as of right now. Ryan Anderson left, has a new home. You've got two dudes that come off the field very little at end, and it's a good thing because they're both special. Montez Sweat, first-round pick 2 years ago. Chase Young, first-round pick last year, defensive rookie of the year. When they do come off the field, who's the next man up at defensive end? I'm not sure they have that guy right now. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed a veteran.
That's
to
my
do that.
Bet, by the way, is they signed somebody.
But for the moment, we're not having that guy. Maybe that's Shaka Toney. Maybe that's William Bradley King from Baylor. That's a position. If I'm going at 240, like Bradley King did, if I'm going 246 overall, like Toney did, I hope I find a spot where they're really thin at defensive end. And those guys
just so
did.
Happened they did, yeah. A couple young guys ahead of them who were excellent, right? Who are certainly ascending players. There is an opportunity there. I still am betting they signed one veteran guy. And there's also something to consider as well, where you could have a certain kind of package where, maybe an outside linebacker sort of creeps up that is as a blitzer with, guys like Matt Ioannidis, Tim Settle, and Jonathan Allen who rushed the passer well, kind of like a jumbo pass rushing thing where you're trying to, create some space or some stunt action type things. But you've got a lot of good defensive linemen, but that pass rushing spot, you are a little bit thin there outside of your first two guys.
Dax Milne, wide receiver BYU, was the last of their double-digit picks in this draft, went 258 overall. Almost Mr. Irrelevant. Not the only thing he has in common with Trey Quinn, who was the last seventh-round, undersized, white wide receiver that everyone kind of fell in love with. I love Dax Milne's game at BYU, and the only reason I even know about him, otherwise I'd be sitting here telling you, this is a seventh-round pick out of BYU, what do I know? I watched him a lot because your boy was enamored with Zach Wilson. And so anytime BYU was on TV or sometimes when they weren't, I would stream their games and watch, and Dax Milne caught a ton of passes from him. He's a really good college player. I have very low expectations in the National Football League, but I'll be curious to see what kind of reports come out on him from rookie minicamp. That's kind of the breakdown of this draft class on this day one of rookie minicamp as those guys got on the field for the first time. Let's do this. Let's open up the phones for our listeners on the Gambit DC listener lines at 800-636-1067 with this question. 800-636-1067. I think we have to take Jamin Davis off the table.
Because it seems like starter, frontline guy from minute one, right?
100%. He should play every snap on defense if he's healthy. Other than Jamin Davis, who do you anticipate having the biggest impact on the 2021 Washington football team? That's the question. Again, 800-636-1067. It does not have to be necessarily one of the guys they drafted. It could be an undrafted free agent. It could be Sam Israelis. But of the rookie minicamp participants, of the guys who are rookies, so primarily this rookie class, Davis out of the equation, who they took at 19 overall, just to make this kind of wide open. Who has the biggest impact this year? Normally, you just go to the second round. Well, that's your tackle that probably isn't going to play unless something happens to one of the veterans. Then you've got St. Juste, Brown, both in the third round. You could go Bates in the fourth round or Forrest in the fifth round. Who's going to have the biggest impact on this team this year other than Jamin Davis?
I think it's Bates. And I think it speaks to their depth. I think it speaks to the fact that they're actually pretty good. It's not one of those things where you draft for need and someone has to come in and play right away. Now, if you'd asked me this last week, I would have said Cosmi. They just signed Charles Leno, a guy that's a dependable starter at left tackle. So I think Cosmi's, you know, path to playing has to do with injury and otherwise. And even still, there are probably a couple guys that are going to be ahead of him on the depth chart. I think they needed this blocking tight end in the worst way. And I think that guy's going to be on the field starting week one for, you know, half the offensive snaps. He's going to play a lot. I don't think people are ready for it, really. I think that guy's going to have the impact. You may see, you know, St. Juste. You may see Brown on occasion in packages. I think you'll see Forrest and certainly Cheeseman on special teams. Both those guys will be on punt coverage units, and I think you'll see Forrest on kind of all the team's units if I had to bet on it. But I think Bates on this offense, not in terms of huge numbers, but I think that's got the guy that's going to have the impact. I think it speaks to the fact that the talent pool has the tide has risen here. This is a better group than they were a couple years ago, where anybody with a pulse that was a rookie draft pick probably would get thrust in right away, or there'd be some old decrepit veteran. They got a lot of guys in their primes right now.
And I think it's a compliment. Is it noticeable, though? And I totally get your answer, because we went through the names, and Bates is the guy we kind of came across that we said will play the second most. But if he's doing a lot of blocking, I'm thinking he might catch 22 balls.
20 balls, yeah.
Will it be noticeable? I mean, and look, if he's plowing the way in the run game and he's getting called out by, you know, some Mark Schlereth former lineman on the color that day,
right,
who's giddy to say, and look at big John Bates here. But is it something that he'll be helpful and we may not notice it, or do you think it's going to be pretty obvious?
I think it'll be the former. I think it'll be unsexy. You know, I've kind of done this. Everybody's, you know, saying, well, this Terry McLaurin, he was a third rounder. I think that was one of the most unique lightning in a bottle situations. If they'd known how good he was, he would have gone to the third round, if anybody did. And that was their fourth option at Ohio State and somehow turned himself into a damn superstar, which is amazing. But this is another in that Antonio Gandy golden, oh, this is really, really great. Productive college guy. There's nothing wrong with Yami Brown. That's the kind of mistake I would make. I say that all the time. But expecting a third rounder to walk in, end up as a starter, be the deep threat, I think is a huge ask for somebody in that position. I don't think he'll do it right away. Maybe he'll end up with some routes run and be an Aldrick Robinson type guy in year one. I think next year is kind of the year I've got penciled for him to sort of ascend into that role.
Well, you know, what I wonder about Brown too is they do have other young wide receivers,
yeah,
who are trying to make their way. Antonio Gandy Golden, Kelvin Harmon coming back from a tear of the ACL. Now,
Cam Sims played pretty well in his action last year, honestly.
Cam Sims, to me, is higher on the depth chart, though. I mean, I'm talking about guys who haven't done it or proven it, who are just trying. It might be ahead of him in the pecking order day one of training camp. But here's my question on that.
Yep.
Are those guys on the bubble? Like, Harmon was not drafted by this group. They inherited him, and he was injured last year. AGG was drafted by this group, but who knows? Was that more of a Kyle Smith pick? Was that someone that Rivera and the wide receivers coaches really, really liked? You never really know. We'll find that out probably on cutdown day this year. But if Deami Brown is parked behind those guys in the preseason, then it's going to be a lot harder for him to make a big impact this year. But if one or both of those guys isn't in the plans, isn't around, isn't blocking him, I think it could be a very different conversation, because he could actually get some targets in September. I'm going to answer this question next. And I will start next segment with my answer. It's different than Danny's. Danny goes John Bates. I think mine's a bit of a surprise. Question is, other than Jamin Davis, who will make the biggest impact on the 2021 Washington football team of this year's rookie class? Phone lines are yours at 800-636-1067. We're getting to your calls on this next on Grant and Danny on The Fan. take Jamin Davis, linebacker out of Kentucky, off the table. Which rookie Washington football teamer in 2021 is going to make the biggest impact on the team? Today is day one of rookie minicamp. It goes through the weekend. We'll get a report from Ashburn coming up in about a half hour. Grant and Danny on the Fan, welcome back. All right, so here's my answer. Benjamin St. Juste, Minnesota, corner. I think they got a plan for him. I think first and foremost, he can play multiple positions and do a couple different things for them in their secondary. He is not a burner by any means. I think he ran a 4.5, 140, but he's long, he's lengthy, he's physical. Also, they don't have a ton of depth at the cornerback position. You can't go into a year, Danny, and not expect to lose some man games at corner.
Sure.
It's just such a physical position. You're taking on ball carriers at the line of scrimmage often, kind of coming down and cracking people. Look at Kendall Fuller's games played, missed time beginning of last season. So the plan is, obviously, you have William Jackson on one side and Kendall Fuller on the other. Who's next on the depth chart? If Moreland's in the nickel, it's a seventh-round pick like Greg Stroman, or it's a guy like Danny Johnson. Benjamin St. Juste might be the third corner on their depth chart on the outside.
It makes sense.
That means he's going to play. I think they have plans for him to play. I think he's actually going to play a lot.
So one of my favorite things that good teams do, and hear me out on this, is the Ravens, for example, for so many years, they would take somebody, everyone else would go, well, this guy can't do this, and they go, well, we'll figure out something that he can do. And he can be physical. He can play close to the line. He can use his length. Well, figure out something he can do with that.
Let's go to the phones. 800-636-1067. Gambit DC listener lines. Bet, play, win with Gambit DC. Ben's in Rockville. What's up, Ben?
Hey, Ben.
Hey guys. Great show as always, Jandy. I honestly take issue. I believe, Grant, you said, let's find a player to take off the table. Honestly, dude, if you say that, that's sort of like saying, let's take Tom Brady off the table. It's just a horrible idea. Let's take someone off the table. Doesn't work that way, man. I think given time, see what happens. If someone had said, let's take Tom Brady off the table, what would happen? We'd see what happened. Tom Brady, he'd still be amazing, and let's take him off the table. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible statement to make.
I do not agree with that statement.
We're just saying you're not allowed to answer Jamin Davis. What rookie's going to have a good impact?
Let's take him off the table. We're saying, other than Jamin Davis, who will play every single snap that he's healthy for this year, who will be the most successful rookie on this team? I don't get your point.
I would say pay more attention to it and give it some time, but I would not say any effect. I would not say just take someone off the table immediately. I would wait and see. Just do not even think about saying, let's take someone off the table.
We've got a communication issue here. Always appreciate you listening.
No. I have to.
Okay, you take it.
What are
I'm
you
good.
Talking about?
I'm pulling the ripcord.
Do you understand what we're asking?
I understand what you're asking, but at the same time, though, I would not jump to conclusions. I think you're jumping to easy conclusions. You're jumping way ahead. I think you're jumping to conclusions. I think you need to give some time.
But you think it's too big of an assumption to say that Jamin Davis, the only rookie in the rookie class who's already been named a starter, who they've already said is not expected to come off the field, it is too big of an assumption to say that he is likely to have more of an impact than the other guys?
I can say that RG3 was a bust, and I can say that people thought that he was the king of all.
He was not in 2012, though. Again, if you go back and you say of the 2012 rookie class, the quarterback who was the rookie of the year versus the other players, he was probably the most impactful rookie that year, correct? So if we did this topic in 2012, what I would have said is, other than Robert Griffin, let's take him off the
table. Who's going to start a lot.
I don't know if he's understanding the question or not. I loved how many times he said take someone off the table, though.
Like, in other words, like, we're basically saying that Jamin Davis will never be any good. That's not what we're saying at all.
I didn't take it that way. I think he was saying something along the lines of, don't assume that Jamin Davis is going to be great. He might not be. And to that I say, okay, fine. Back to the topic at hand that you called in to answer.
Or didn't.
Which rookie other than him would have the biggest impact? Let's go to James in Manassas on G&D.
What's up, James?
James, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What's up, man? Get us back on track.
I would say it's either Deami Brown, because I think that his long speed, the 40 time looks terrible, but his 60, he has longer speed, kind of like Jerry Rice ran a 4.6 40, but it was way faster. I think Yami's going to help. It's going to be either him or Jarrett Patterson, the undrafted rookie free agent. I think that either one of them will probably have the biggest impact other than Jamin Davis.
So there is something to be said, James, for running back is always kind of the flavor of the month this time of year, right? Like, what about this running back? It was Lake Seastrunk. It was, and we could go
Marcus Mason.
50 names like that of guys that didn't latch on. I am enticed by Patterson like everyone else is. And for people that don't really know the profile, he played his college ball at Buffalo. He's very undersized. He's listed 5'8". I think he might be a little shorter than that. He's compact, though. He's pretty well put together. He's about 200 pounds, a little bowling ball. And today, the comp that Rivera used was Darren Sproles. And remember, Rivera was with Darren Sproles really early on, maybe in Philly or – no, it would have been the Chargers.
Well, the Chargers.
So he comped him to Sproles. He's also a Laurel, Maryland guy, went to St. Vincent, I believe, in Laurel. Was never really a highly sought-after guy, a couple of star recruit. He was a MAC MVP at one point, Offensive Player of the Year in 2020, Freshman of the Year 2018, super well-decorated, two-time first team, all MAC. I mean, he's done everything he can do in college. So I want to see. He ran for 1,700 yards at one point in college and 1,000 the other two seasons. One time he ran, this past year, for 1,000 yards in six games. Super productive. I'm excited to see. The better answer for me there, though, I love Deami Brown.
Yep.
Go back to my question last segment. Mm-hmm. Do you think Brown starts camp even with ahead of, behind your Harmon and your AGG? Cam Sims will obviously be a front of those guys because he played well last year at times. But those other guys didn't. Gandy Golden did nothing. Harmon was hurt. Does Brown start even footing with those guys or ahead of them on the depth chart because he was just drafted in the third round?
See, I think he starts behind in one of those work your way up, kid, type things. So I think if he does have an impact, I wouldn't bet that it's right away. I think he learns the ropes, kind of figures it out as this thing goes, and maybe does what Cam Sims did last year. And if the opportunity presents itself, plays towards the end of the season. I think they're going to have enough bodies ahead of him, especially with the addition of Samuel.
Deami Brown, 1,034 yards, 1,099 yards the last 2 years. At North Carolina, averaged over 20 yards per catch over the last two
seasons.
That's
my favorite part.
Pretty sure I saw that he had 7 touchdowns of 50 or more yards in college, and I think no one else had that many while he was in school. Let's go to Rory in Winchester. What's up, Rory? How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Doing great.
Awesome, awesome. I like the Jarrett Patterson pick. I mean, I love me some Gibson. I love me some McKissick. But running back is a really injured area for every team, it feels like, every year. And I think that he'll get a good opportunity to get on the field. And if he gets that opportunity, I think he won't easily give it back to the other guys, and they'll let them sit a little longer to make sure they're all the way healed up because they're not going to have any drop-off in production.
So behind Gibson for the straight-up backup running back, because McKissick's a different player. That's your third-down back, whatever you want to call it, your scat back, your pass-catching guy. It's not a world-beating list. It's a lot of Peyton Barber and Lamar Miller, and I don't know who Jonathan Williams is, but he's there. So there may be some opportunity there to be your sort of straight-up backup to Antonio Gibson.
Barber was awesome in the role they gave him last year. Mm-hmm. I know you don't like him. You don't have to. What I called, he's an and-one guy. Third and one, fourth and one, short yardage. He was great in that capacity. Now, Lamar Miller might be able to do that. He's been a burner in the past and has had a pretty good career, and that's a guy who's been to a Pro Bowl. So they might say, we don't need Peyton Barber because now we've got Lamar Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Patterson, to me, has practice squad kind of written all over him. And then if something were to happen to Gibson or whoever the other back is, let's say it's Miller, maybe you elevate him. I am interested in the amount of attention and reverence and kind of just overall respect he's getting because of how good Gibson was last year. I think people forget a little bit. Like, that was a tough transition for him that probably, and we're maybe guilty of it, we didn't talk about enough. You go from wide receiver.
It really is amazing.
To running back and make it look that easy? I mean, the only reason he didn't run for 1,000 yards because he didn't run the ball that often, because Washington didn't run the ball a ton. He missed two games or else he probably would have been somewhere around 1,000 yards last year as a rookie in a league where guys don't go for 1,000 that much. And his 11 touchdowns, not only the most by a rookie, really respectable, even stacked up to the best running backs in the game. He'll catch more balls this year than 36 last year.
I'd like to hope so.
I think Gibson is going to take a step forward as a featured player and kind of an all-down type guy. So, selfishly, I hope that we don't have to see a whole lot of anybody else other than he and McKissick, because I think Gibson can carry the load. I mean, we saw in some games like the Dallas games last year,
yeah,
that guy looked like a mauler.
He looked like it.
Let's go to Matt in Stafford. Matt, been a while. What's up, brother?
What's up, guys? I love the show. I'm going to put it on the table. Fitzpatrick is going to love McLaurin and Logan Thomas, so I don't know if Brown's going to have that big of an impact. And then Cosme, he's kind of buried behind a lot of these tackles, but maybe he can crack it as a guard. But my biggest impact, from what is kind of crazy now, WFT is getting some depth. I think it's going to be Shaka Tony. He's just – it's not a guy who flashes. That's what you hear in the seventh round from people. It's a guy who competed with top-tier talent, made clutch plays, and was dominant at times. Shaka Tony could make an impact on special teams right off the bat and become a rotational player.
I don't know if you heard Shaka Tony on the show recently, Matt. He was awesome. That was one of my favorite interviews
we've
done.
Yeah, he was great, man.
And Leno was really good recently. Samus Reyes, I mean, that's a Hall of Fame kind of conversation that we had with him. Shaka Tony just made me love the guy in one conversation. I'm rooting like heck for him. 7.5 tackles for loss and 5 sacks last year. He had 11.5 sacks the last couple years at Penn State.
Productive player, man.
Those are better numbers than you're normally getting out of a school like Penn State in the seventh round.
Yeah, those are the mistakes. I always talk about this. At the late rounds, I either grab a trait that's elite, speed, strength, you know, length, whatever it is, or hyper-productivity, and he's the latter.
It's a lock, by the way, that Maddie and Stafford.
It's Penn State guy.
With Penn State guy.
Penn State
guy. No one's ever sounded more yinzer than that call right there. It's weird that he didn't say, you guys want a pop? I got an extra one in the back of the car. I'll drive yins over some pop. I mean, he was yinzing it up, talking about the
Nicky Lions. PA roots. He's a sneaky Penn State guy, Maddie and Stafford.
He wasn't
is.
That sneaky in that call.
Well, not in that call. Yins going downtown root for Shaka Tony and that.
Yin's getting over Three Rivers. See the game this weekend. Well, Yin's like Three Rivers better, or you like Heinz Field better? What Yin's like better?
What are Yin's liking better?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will wrap up the calls on the rookie that'll make the biggest impact. Cover your ears, everybody. Other than Jamin Davis. Taking Jamin Davis.
You can't take him off the table, Grant.
Off the table. Who else will help this team a lot in this rookie class this year? 800-636-1067. We'll also get you a double play next right here on the Fan. Play coming up in just a few. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We are checking in with you on the Gambit DC listener lines. Bet, play, win with Gambit DC, brought to you by the DC Lottery. Who other than Jamin Davis, who's going to play every down he's healthy for at linebacker, will impact Washington the most of this rookie class? Just squeeze in a couple calls real quick and then get to our double play. Javelin Culpepper, what do you got?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Good, buddy.
I really feel that the offensive line, I was going to say Cosme, but I feel that the additions that we made over the offseason acquisitions of the offensive line, I think he's a project player 2, maybe 3 years down the road. But I really feel that Benjamin St. Jude at corner, you put him at the third corner, with Fuller and Jackson, I think he makes an immediate impact. And also, I feel a lot of people aren't talking about it. I think Derek Forrest, if Derek Forrest can show something this week in minicamp with the rookies and through the offseason, if he can be a valuable option, I think that also spells trouble for, Collins, because Collins may be out of the organization as of June 1st, because after June 1st, it's a lot of money that can be saved on his contract. And with that Achilles, especially for someone who can't cover from the safety position that well, if Forrest can make an impact, I think he's going to be the starter, with Curl, and I think Collins is going to be out.
But, I mean, you still have to pay a lot of money to not use Landon Collins. His last game that he played before he got hurt was his best game. I still think there's football left in him. I'm not sure that he'll be here next year, but I think he'll be playing for the team this season. But you're right, no one has mentioned Forrest. We haven't talked about him that much, and he is the one guy at a massive position of need, safety. Now, can he play free adequately? If he can, and he's not a traditional strong kind of box safety, then there's almost an unimpeded path to the field. It's guys like DeShazer Everett and Jeremy Reeves, as well as he played last year, who are like undrafted free agent types and special teamer types that he could just leapfrog.
So for Collins, it's a $26 million cap at pre-June 1st cut. That's dead cap. No, thank you. It's cheaper post-June 1st, $16.7 million. It's still not cheap.
Yeah, well, you're not going to pay that much for him to not be able to help you?
Yeah.
This guy, well, you don't have to think he's great anymore. He's a former All-Pro. Like, he can do something on a good defense, to help you be a better football
player. I think he's going to be an expensive rotation player this year, honestly, but still, he'll be on the field. He'll help you.
A couple people think it's going to be the long snapper, including Matt in Columbia. Matt, make the case for the cheese man. I got nothing against him. I'm anti-drafting long snappers, but if he's a good one, then go for it.
Could not agree more. I do not agree with drafting long snappers. That being said, there is nobody in this rookie class that is going to come in and have to deal with an immediate impact and scrutinized and pressure position than Cameron Cheeseman. The big cheese is going to have to be involved. I hope we're not punting a lot. We are going to have to kick extra points, and eventually there's going to be a field goal, and he is going to be thrust right into the throws. He better damn well make the biggest impact this year, because we cannot have the most stakes in special teams during those close games.
100% right.
I love the show.
Thank you, pal. Yeah, he's got to be good.
When's the last time a snap has dearly cost Washington? I mean, it's been a long time.
It's been – I couldn't pull one atop my head, you know, before the 1999 playoffs. Right, somewhere between then and now. It hasn't happened in a minute. Maybe
Sundberg's
I'm wrong.
Sundberg's been almost automatic.
He's been automatic, right?
Maybe there's a snap here or there that wasn't great or perfect. But, I mean, I don't recall a single time where he's had a snap that, like, they couldn't get a kick off because it was on the ground. Or
an airmail. Or, yeah, there's no ground ball to short. I don't think it's been a long time.
If you get drafted in the sixth round, that better not be a thing. That's all I know.
You better be good.
You can't draft the long snapper who has a single snap that's your first snap as an organization in 10 years that's errant. You could have a bad snap where a guy has to reach to his left before he punts it or something like that. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our live? Nothing to do with sports. Double play sponsored by Mattress Warehouse with free next day delivery and setup available on all orders over $7.99 and a one-year price guarantee. Learn more at sleephappens.com.
Jeeps, everyone over talks about the cicadas. They're harmless. They do nothing. Maybe they like eat a tree or a leaf or whatever. But the point is there's billions of them. There's a lot of them and they're coming. They make some noise. Again, everyone should calm down. Here's what's bad about the cicadas arriving. They're food. The occasional dumb person will eat one. Please don't do that. They're gross and they're crunchy. But they kind of sit there and they make a lot of noise. They're food for gross animals that are invasive and not so good. Rats eat cicadas. Ooh. Urban rat populations have been known to thrive in and around cicadas, and rural populations as well. Predators, even venomous ones like snakes, will gather in places where they can sense that cicadas are coming and snap them up, just cherry-picking meals. Because again, the cicadas, when they first come out, they're kind of helpless and awkward, and they're bite-sized for these venomous things. Copperheads in Virginia will probably thrive. Moles, invasive species like those that chew up ground, that ruin people's gardens and the like, are going to get after the cicadas. That is what's bad about the cicadas. So, brace yourself for it. In 2004, there was an explosion in the D.C. area rat population. A lot of people think it was the last time this brood of cicadas came around because the rats don't have to forage. It's easy for them, and they thrive, and then they have babies, and then there's more of them. Ew.
Can we workshop that, though?
Yep.
I'm just thinking for myself. If I went and ate a lot, I'd be less likely to want to procreate. I would just be full and lethargic and gross.
That's you, though.
So rats get really fat and full and then
yeah,
want
for
to?
Foraging creatures that are just, they're so disgusting and awful and evil and terrible, and I hate them so much. That's what they want to do. They basically, as soon as their survival needs are met, it's just, they make more.
even though they're very full.
Yeah. Once they're comfortable and alive, they make more.
You just had a huge meal.
That's the last thing I'm doing.
Right.
Please don't touch me. I'm very sweaty.
So you're with me.
Yeah.
So you said that's you as if I'm kind of on an island here.
No, yeah, I'm saying that's you, human being Grant Paulson.
Okay,
that's a reasonable thing. Like
so
this
you're
past
on
Saturday.
My team.
Yeah, of course. This past Saturday, I had two entrees when I went to Lupo Verde, right? I did that myself. And everyone looked at me like, you're disgusting and you're gross. And I am. I did that because it was a special treat for me. The last thing I wanted to do was make more Danny's. There's no way that's on the agenda.
I bet it wasn't.
It was definitely not. A, the disgust that my wife had towards me. But B,
well,
we're not doing
thing.
It anymore.
When you eat like that, you also don't have to worry about it very often.
Right.
Because there's just going to be some anger and some disdain.
Yeah. It's self-fulfilling. I don't feel like it. She certainly doesn't. We got it.
But that's the thing is, you know, like big events like birthday or anniversary or Valentine's Day or whatever, you go out to a nice dinner.
To me, the meal's the exciting thing.
Well, I can't stop eating in those situations.
If the food is good, I have a valve that shuts off my governor.
I'm sure
just keep eating.
There's a lot of people that can just eat to a certain level where they leave and they still feel okay.
Like J.P. Finley was eating wings today, and he made it seem like eating 20 wings was the most arduous, uphill, Sisyphusian task in the history of mankind.
He walked by us at one point, and he's like, guys, I've eaten 17. And I'm like, oh. He's like, I got 30
nice.
More minutes. And I'm like, you mean in the last 10 minutes? He's like, no, 3.5 hours. And I'm like, is that okay? Like... And he's like, I'm struggling. I might not get to 21.
Which I can't. I just can't even imagine.
I do have to congratulate him.
He did
because
it.
He ate 22 wings, and so I have to give him $5 per wing, plus I'm giving him a $100 bonus for getting beyond 21.5, which
nice.
Is the number. So overall, he's making $210 for Catholic Charities.
Very neat.
Which was, I believe,
good
the charity
for,
that
good
he
for
chose.
James Patterson there. That is awesome.
Also good for Michael A. Taylor, who just hit a homer.
That's always good to see. It's
old
good to
friend,
see.
Michael A. Taylor, going deep for the Royals in a matinee game. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz is next. Matt Moore, one of our favorite NBA guests, will discuss Washington's chances at chasing down the 8 seed with 2 games to go and what he thinks might come of them making the play-in tourney. He'll be with us at 4:40 today right here on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.